What's up, buddy?
Hey, hey, how you doing?
Hanging in there, hanging in there. Chris, welcome back, my Yay. Friend. We have missed you.
Sure, I know you have. Why wouldn't you?
Very, very true. Have you listened to the last two episodes we did?
Yeah, intently.
I would love to say that the Winnipeg commentary was not lacking at all while you were gone, at all.
Yeah, I don't recall anything about that.
Well, welcome everyone. Welcome to episode 14 of South of the Blue Line. Chris is back. Where have you been, Chris? Yay.
I've been on a boat.
Wow.
Just one?
Just the one. Actually, no, I've been on three boats.
Oh, wow.
But one major boat and two small boats.
So what were you doing on said boat there, my friend?
Sampling all of the alcohol.
Ah, okay. So your liver's really had a workout.
My liver is wearing a Band-Aid right now.
So where did you go? Because it was a cruise, correct?
Yes. We went to Puerto Rico, we went to St. Martin, and we went to Haiti, believe it or not.
Wow, that's a pretty solid trip.
It was fun. It was a good time.
Good stuff, good stuff. Well, boys, a lot has happened the last week.
A couple things.
just a few. So we'll start, like always, with the games that we had previously. There weren't many games for the All-Star break, but we started off, the Jets lost 4-2 to the Stars. Chris, how caught up are you with the Jets?
I actually watched the games on the boat.
Really?
Yeah, they got good internet on the boat nowadays. So
damn,
I was sitting in a nightclub watching the games on a boat.
Mm. So what do you have to say about this one, the Stars game?
I feel like the Jets kind of got screwed around a bit by the refs. I feel like they're missing Ehlers and Bufflin a little bit now.
Yeah, that's right. How long has Bufflin been out? I mean, because that was recent.
He's been out for a few weeks now. They say his window to come back is right after the All-Star break. So.
Okay. So they've just, all right. I mean, didn't help the Oilers at all in the wild card race, so thanks for that.
Sorry about that.
Well, I mean, the Oilers aren't helping the Oilers in the wild card race, so it's fine.
Also very true. So now moving on to the Oilers. Oilers have the third Battle of Alberta. This one was in Edmonton, and they lost 5-2. And This was a game where I've been talking to my grandpa about the game before the game started, and I was like, you know, they'll probably go down 3-0. I'll turn the game off, and then they go down 3-0 in the first period, and then I was like, I'm gonna turn the game off, and then I'm like on my way to turn the game off, and they score a goal to make it 3-1. I'm like, okay, you know, maybe I'll keep watching. Second period starts, we score another one. 3-2. I'm like, all right, now I gotta be in it. And then they lose the game, and then they fall apart in the third period, and I stayed up for
that.
The
third
game
was awful. It was that entire game was kind of it was almost a little bit lackluster too, because there wasn't really the fire that you've seen a lot of the Battle of Alberta's, I think.
Yeah, it was pretty. It wasn't like a hot, heated battle. Koskinen, though, I mean, I feel like he gave up a few softies, but he had a few unreal saves.
Yeah, it was a little bit of a Jekyll and Hyde game for him, for sure.
Yeah, it's true. And so, you know, we lose that game. And then next day, we turn around and play back-to-back against the Hurricanes and just get absolutely curb-stomped.
Yeah, that game sucked, dude. It took them, I think, 8 minutes to get their first shot in that game.
I think it was 10.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah, they don't get their first shot of the game. They get scored on the other first shot of the game. You know, Niederreiter, who was recently traded to the Hurricanes, scored
naturally
2. And then the Oilers, I think the Oilers were down 6-1, and then they scored three quick ones to make it
6-4. I'll be honest with you. I didn't watch after, like, I think the second maybe on this one.
Yeah, no, they scored the third goal in that first period, and we barely had – I think we had two shots on that.
Yeah. That was an awful game.
Another awful game. And then last game of the week, Oilers play the Detroit Red Wings. They go down 2-0 in the first period, I believe. And then they score one to make it 2-1. And then the Wings score to make it 3-1. And then we made a score to make it 3-2. And just can't get back to the game again. Lose to the last place team in the league.
And then Chiarelli was fired.
And then Chiarelli was fired, everyone. Yay!
It finally happened.
Oh, my goodness. The meltdown that was on Twitter, like, Chris, you were tweeting at us. You were like, I'm sure there's some happy podcasters. Like, oh, man.
Oof. How's that?
Chiarelli.
How's that Eberle trade looking?
Yeah. So I guess we could move on to the I just want to first say Kyle did the predictions with us last week, and we all did horribly. I think this is the first week that the Jets and Oilers combined didn't win a game in the week. So I think the final score was like 1-1 to nothing. We all did. No one won. It was a horrible week prediction.
Pretty solid.
So then also before Chiarelli was fired, he sends down Caleb Jones. So I don't know if we want to touch on Caleb Jones a little bit.
Honestly, I was pretty impressed with him the entire time he was up.
I was as well. He made that really bonehead pass to kind of put the game away in Calgary. But I mean, young defenseman, I think he'll be good addition.
I'm really excited about him for sure.
Then they send down Ryan Spooner. Put Ryan Spooner and Ty Ratty on waivers, meaning that Jordan Eberle was traded for Ryan Strome, 1-for-1. Ryan Strome was traded for Ryan Spooner, 1-for-1. And now Ryan Spooner is on waivers, so what you could say is Jordan Eberle was traded for a waiver.
Jordan Eberle ends up being traded for $3 million in cap space. That's
– yes.
And I guess Spooner is technically still on the team. They just waived him, so –
they buried him in the minors.
Yeah, it's – yep. Yep. So, that's a good one.
And then the day before Chiarelli is fired, he signs Mikko Koskinen to a $4.5 million 3-year deal. Meaning they basically have said Talbot is no longer the starter and is Koskinen. And – so, but my question to you guys is, why would the Oilers, who had been talking about firing Chiarelli for a while, let him sign this deal and then fire him the next day?
Apparently, there's like the organization itself was on board with the Koskinen thing. So, which honestly just makes me terrified that maybe it wasn't Chiarelli pulling all these strings all along, but instead was Bob Nicholson or someone like that.
Yeah,
in which case, that's terrifying, dude.
No, I mean, Chiarelli's ineptitude precedes him even before he came to Edmonton. I mean, you can make the argument that hiring Chiarelli in the first place was an epically stupid thing to do. looking in hindsight, but even not even in hindsight, like what did he do? What did he do in Boston? Really?
He traded Sagan.
Yeah,
he traded Wheeler.
Yeah.
For Rip
and Wheeler.
Like, I mean, I know they ended up winning a cup, but that wasn't good asset management. No. You could pick up a Rich Peverly for nothing.
Yeah.
You also could say that most of the pieces that they won the cup with were in place before Chiarelli was hired.
Yeah. Oh, 100%. Exactly. I don't know if like that was part of the Oilers decision-making process. They thought, oh, he's a cup winning GM, but you know, it's like the president of the United States. Like, the good or bad things that happen to the country
are most likely set into motion by the previous president. So, you know, a president who's doing a good job can end up getting shit on for what the previous guy did, or vice versa. And I think that's the Shirelli effect.
And so then, Bob Mickelson, the president of hockey operations, comes out. And I thought it was funny. They fired Shirelli in the second period of the Red Wings game to give him time to get out of the building.
Which I guess is like kind of a good move by the organization. At least they're not firing him in the middle of a whole bunch of angry Oilers fans or something like that. But
well, there's a couple different ways you could fire people. You could fire, I believe, someone. I forgot who it was, but they fired someone over Skype.
Yeah.
Ralph Kruger or Dallas Eakins?
I think it was Ralph Kruger. They fired over Skype to hire Dallas Eakins the next day.
Yeah, they fired him over Skype. Then there's the Dale Talon. They fired him outside of the rink, so he didn't get a cab.
Right. So all things considered, the Oilers did it pretty good.
What's
Are you sure that wasn't Gerard Gallant?
You're right. It was Gallant. Yeah. It was Gallant. See, look at that. We're glad you're back already. So then they say Bob Mickelson comes out and says that they fired him in the second period, and that Keith Gretzky will be taking over most of Shirelli's duties.
All right, Chris. Before you start laughing too much, there, Chris. He is the assistant general manager, so it makes sense for him to take over at the point.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, that's.
I don't think Chris is laughing. Yeah, Chris, why are you laughing, buddy?
I feel like I'm being tickled by elves. I don't know what's happening. I don't. The level of incompetence just doesn't stop in this organization. Like, they need – the owner of this team needs to fire everybody and hire, like, Steve Yzerman. And then
– I was about to get there.
Stay the fuck out of it. 100% stay the fuck out of it. That's what needs to happen. Get rid of anybody who's ever watched an Oilers game from the 80s. Just – start from the beginning. That's the only way. This toxicness and this poisonous bullshit has been going on for too long, and it won't stop. If you keep like trying to cut out the cancer, it's just going to grow back. You got to start from scratch.
And that kind of brings us to something Bob Mickelson actually said in his press conference when he was talking about firing Shirelli. He said that there's something here in the water in Edmonton, and we got to figure out what it is.
It's him. Bob Nicholson's
so, I mean,
peeing in the water.
So that's what Dalton, you kind of talked about it earlier, in the sense that like maybe Shirelli, because the organization was still behind the idea of signing Koskinen into this super long deal that we didn't really talk about, that means maybe Shirelli wasn't the one pulling the strings there at the end, which means like, okay, we bring in another GM, but like, is he really going to be making all of his own decisions?
Exactly. How much are things actually going to change?
Yeah, and I think that's a huge question that's going around the whole organization. Like, you look at Twitter, and it's just an absolute tire fire of people laughing at the Oilers, at the fans just being kind of confused. Like, honestly, like I feel in the dark. I have no idea what's going on, and like, if they hire another GM, will things actually change? And that's a real big question mark going on with the organization.
And also another thing too, kind of like a fun little stat that's not fun at all. Even though like there's all this, like a lot of controversy surrounding the Oilers this year and how poorly they've done, this is the fourth best statistical year they've had in the last 13 years. Fourth best. And they're this bad.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh dear.
And Connor David and Leon Draisaitl and Ryan Nugent-Hopkins are having career seasons.
Yeah, it's just how much losing will the Oilers have to go through before it's over? Basically, is another 10 years still? I don't know, man.
I hope not. So, who do you boys think will become the next Oilers? Yeah, there's a few few names out there. There's like a real sexy one in Steve Yzerman, even though he's been rumored of going back to Detroit.
Please God, Steve Yzerman.
I know Steve Yzerman here would be so good. So I mean, who do you guys think? I mean, I think it's fair to say we all would hope the Oilers get Steve Yzerman, but like realistically, who do you think like would become the next GM? Do you think they give it to Keith Gretzky?
I honestly
yes.
think they probably are going to let Keith Gretzky have a shot.
Yeah. You think so?
Yeah.
I think it's very likely, at least. Well, if they – I don't know, man. I kind of want them to a little bit as well, just because maybe Keith Gretzky actually knows what he's doing. Maybe.
Doubtful.
Maybe.
Doubtful.
So, I mean
– It's not going to be – It's
anything else?
It's not going to be Yzerman.
Yeah.
It's –
I don't think so either.
They always should be doing everything they can to get Yzerman, but I don't think it's going to be Yzerman.
Do you think it helps that Connor McDavid is on the team? They can use that as like a, hey, like, listen, if you come be the Oilers GM, like, you guys have Connor McDavid, the best player in the world, on the roster already.
Anybody who's good should see that Oilers opportunity as a real positive opportunity. You have a city full of like hockey crazy fans. You've got a brand new gorgeous rink. You got this one of the sickest jerseys in the league.
You have an owner who's not afraid of mm-hmm. spending money.
Right. And you're not, and you have, and there's, and you, it's hard for you to actually do worse than they've done in the last like decade and a half. So even if you're not really great, you could be mediocre and still be better than what they've done. So, I don't know. The way I look at it, it's a great opportunity to turn that franchise into a winner again and just be adored by millions of people.
It's very true. Okay, so my next question is, how long do you think it takes for someone to turn the roster around they have now around? How, like, do you think they can do it by the end of this year or a couple years or longer?
I think they could make this roster a playoff team this year, but I don't know, probably a good couple of years still. Like, I don't know. It all depends in my mind, it all depends on Koskinen right now. Like, or goaltending in general.
Any team with a reasonable amount of talent can go far. Look at the Golden Knights last year.
Yeah, exactly.
It was, they had some talent, yes. They had good goaltending. They had some guys who could score. They didn't really have much for defense. They played a good system, and they had a really good chemistry.
They played tight, fast hockey.
In my mind, it's almost everything that's happening with the Oilers right now is psychological. So they need to fix that. But that can be fixed. I think it can be fixed, unless the players themselves are broken. Uh-huh. And some of them may be.
Yeah. The thing is, I still feel like this Oilers roster can be a playoff team just basically getting Klefwall back. Like, I think that's going to make such a huge difference just having that number one D-man back on the team, right?
Yeah, I agree.
Did you see Dustin Penner's?
I did see Dustin Penner's tweet. I actually don't have it up. What did he say?
He said something like, that's just the way it is, or and it goes on, or something to allude to the fact that it was like that when he was there as well.
All right there, pancakes.
Right? go to Denny's and have a meal, buddy. Chill out. That guy was ever in shape.
Is that what he said?
Oh, he was the most frustrating player to watch.
Oh, yeah. He very... But, very not a lot of gaff in him, that's for sure.
So, where is that? I'm on Dustin Penner's Twitter right now. Oh man, he's got a lot of. I'm looking at. He's got a lot of like, political stuff on here.
Oh yeah.
Okay, he's got. So someone said, someone tweeted at him and said, okay, I'm going back. It's a long, here's what we got. So Rob Trukowski says, he writes for the Edmonton Sun. He said, quick fix, the Oilers are looking for at 3 or 4 more years of nuclear winner, dress warmly, Edmonton. Then he says, here we go again. He quote tweets his own article, says, here we go again. Dustin Penner tweets at him, down the only road we've been known. Rob Trakowski tweets at him at that tweet saying, grab your skates. They need scoring depth on the wings. And then he responds, says, hashtag mega, make Edmonton great again. It's a working title. I remember Dustin Penner, though. He was a hell of a player in that 06 run.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
He's one of those guys who just had, like, an otherworldly performance. Fernando Pisani, Mike Greer.
Oh, my Ethan Morrow.
Half the freaking team, pretty much.
Ethan Morrow.
Everyone.
Do you know how many defensemen they used that year? They used 20 defensemen that year. They had Danny Savret playing for them for a while.
All that mattered is they had Pronger.
Yeah.
Marc-Andre Bergeron. Oh, my God. They had some fucking plugs playing.
Igor Kulak
played out of his mind. He was amazing.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, Dwayne Rolofsson played a performance that was next level. I mean, I think that's kind of what you're alluding to in the sense of, like, it's a mindset. Yeah. Like that team wasn't, like, great, but they, like, just sort of had the same vibe that the Golden Knights had last season. They just came together, played for each other, like, with some passion and some speed, and they worked, and they grounded out. So I have two more questions on the whole general manager thing. My first question is, okay, Dalton, Chris, you guys are now Oilers of the GM. What is the first move each of you make to work towards fixing the roster? It can be trading someone. It could be bringing someone in, getting rid of someone. What do you think? Dalton, what do you think?
Probably number one is you pretty much have to trade away Talbot ASAP. He's on last year of his contract, right? So it doesn't really matter how much you have to retain. There's going to be teams, at least some teams out there looking for vet goaltending depth. So he's basically, and at this point in Edmonton, there's no point in keeping him around, right? Might as well move on from him. Also, I think another really important thing for the new GM to do is to wait to see if Sekera, when he comes back, is a legitimate NHL defenseman still. If he's not, then you got to get rid of him as soon as possible too, because that cap hit for that long is going to be awful.
Yeah. So you're trading, first thing is moving Sekera if he's not a good player anymore.
Yeah. And if Sekera ends up being a good player still, I think you probably have to move on from Chris Russell.
Okay. All right. Chris, what do you think? You got one move. What's your first move to start turning things around?
I don't think you make any trades. I think you establish with the team, you meet with the team and you tell them this is a whole new opportunity for you. We want to build build a team around players who want to stay here and compete. So you're going to be given the rest of the year to try to make the playoffs and be a positive contributor. And then we'll make our decisions after the end of the year. I don't think making more moves right now make any sense.
Well, the Talbot one I'm doing just because he's at the UFA at the end of the season, right? Any expiring UFA, I think you got to move at the deadline.
But Dalton, one thing you also have to consider, though, is the Oilers are not out of the playoff race.
That is true.
The West is so terrible that they could go on a little run and find themselves right in the mix. So if you – even though, when you're talking about asset management, it might be smartest to move Talbot right now. What does that tell the players? What does that do if they go on a run and then Koskinen gets hurt and – whoever.
Oh, dear.
Whoa. Welcome back, Chris.
It's been a while.
It has been a while. So everyone knows what that means. So I actually, what I would do, just to kind of, we can let Chris pick back up where he was, but what I would do, now sit down, because this is a NHL 19 GM.
All right.
Okay, here's what I would do. I would call up Jim Nill, the general manager of the Dallas Stars. And I would trade him a Chris Russell, a Cam Talbot, and a Milan Lucci.
All right, so we're at $15 million in cap right now.
With a Kyler Yamamoto attached. In exchange for one, Jamie Benn, one, Roman Polak, and one, Anton Hudobin.
What even is this trade, dude? Oh, I don't know if they take it.
So welcome back, Chris. Hi. What I proposed while you were cut out for the first time was a Chris Russell, Milan Lucic, Cam Talbot, Kaylor Yamamoto trade in exchange for Jamie Benn, Roman Polak, and Anton Hudobin.
I don't think the Stars take that.
So Polak is a fucking plug.
Yeah.
So don't get Polak. He's terrible. Why would you do that?
He's negative value coming back, right? And you need the cap as well.
Then.
Well, that's the reason I took Polak is because Jamie Benn is making 9.5.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So Lucic and Russell are both together making mm-hmm. 10. So I'd be moving, and then Hudobin. And so Polak is also a UFA after this year. Jamie Benn is signed through 24-25. And then Hudobin, it has this year and next year at 2.5. Mm-hmm. Polak is a – so I'd be moving – so Talbot, I would be getting about $500 worth of cap space. If not more, in exchange for a decent backup goalie in
Talbot's Hudobin. Making 4.5 this season, right?
Yeah, so I'd be getting $2 million back mm-hmm. on that. Hudobin's a decent goaltender, backup goalie. He's 32, and he signed for this year and next. Polak is a crappy defenseman. I understand. You could probably flip Polak for another for like a low round pick and just bring up Caleb Jones again and run him roll in that place, because how much better is Caleb Jones compared to Roman Polak? Roman Polak also is a UFA, so you could just run him to the end of the season and hope he fits, because he like did okay on the Leafs team that wasn't very good. And then the whole reason, and then I'm throwing in Yamamoto to sweeten the deal, all for the big fish, Jamie.
I just don't think that's enough value.
And I have a second question. You don't think? When did Shirelli join this podcast?
Oh, that's not a one-for-one trade.
You're going to keep a Jamie Benn who's starting to decline with that contract through 24-25? That's terrible.
Well, I'm just thinking, like, he would, one, help immediately. I don't think he's declining, at least not for that. I would bank on him being good for at least the rest of this year.
If you're going to go after
probably
players, go after Sagan.
They're never gonna part with Sagan. I think they have more bad will with Jamie Benn.
Then you stay away from me.
Anyway,
I don't like that trade at all.
If I was not Edmonton, even. I would do it.
What?
Yeah.
Oh God! I think you guys got diseased by watching this team.
You're getting Lucic, Russell off the cap.
Well, that's. I mean, getting rid of Lucic is great.
Mm-hmm.
I won't deny that.
Yeah, so you're bringing in Jamie Benn that scores more and can have the physical side of Lucic.
Except for instead of Yamamoto, I'd probably try and give up Puljujarvi instead.
Yeah, see, I like Puljujarvi. That's why I did think about maybe Puljujarvi, but I thought in my heart a little bit, and I like.
You don't get rid of Puljujarvi yet. There's no way.
Yeah, I think you give rid of you talk up Yamamoto, tell him how he's gonna be so good in your organization, and then you get rid of him.
I just don't think they take the deal with Yamamoto.
Yeah, I don't know. Okay, so then here's my question: get rid of Yamamoto and put in this year first.
I don't know if I want to give up this year's first.
All right, so Chris, we took out Yamamoto in the trade and put in a first. This year's first.
Oh my God.
Well,
you guys are not allowed to make any trades.
It was just. it was just a workshop on my part, just something I've been thinking about. Mm. I've been scrolling through since Shirelli got fired. I've been scrolling through Cap Friendly, trying to look at different creative ways of making ideas or whatever. And so, okay, so my last question on the GM topic is, what was your guys' favorite memory of Peter Shirelli?
When he got hired only because the Oilers were about to draft McDavid. Because
wonderful. Chris, you have a favorite Shirelli
memory? There are no good Shirelli memories.
That one was one, though, because it was like day one, he gets McDavid, and everything's like looking up in Oilers. It was such a good day.
I'll flip it on its side because I don't think there's anything good about it. I mean, a munchkin from Romania would have drafted Connor McDavid. So I will say the day that he traded Wheeler for Peverly to the Atlanta Thrashers, that's my favorite memory of Shirelli.
Yeah. My favorite memory of Shirelli was the press conference where he came out in the Taylor Hall Adam Larson trade, and he almost forgot who he traded with and for what. Do y'all remember that press conference? He came out here. He goes, "We traded Taylor Hall for New Jersey for defenseman Adam Larson." And like, he just sounded completely confused by what he was doing.
I remember that freaking trade. That was awful.
I have a jersey, a Taylor Hall jersey. I pulled it out, and I took a picture of the back, and I tweeted it at the Oilers Nation. And I was like, how could you do this? Or the Oilers, I was like, how could you do this? And I pulled out my Nugent Hopkins jersey and took a picture of it. And I was like, please don't tell me you're trading him as well.
Yeah, but honestly, of all, like, of the three, Eberle, Nuge, and Hall, which one, if you had to trade one of them, would you trade?
Eberle.
Really?
Easiest decision of my freaking life, dude.
I would have stayed with the Taylor Hall trade. I would have traded one of those trades,
like what he did.
No, if you were forced to trade one of those three players, which one would you trade?
Oh, Eberle by a landslide, dude.
Taylor Hall.
I'd trade Nugent Hopkins.
No.
Okay. So we all have one of each. So, Chris, we'll start with you. You would trade Nugent.
Just because I feel like as skilled of a player, of the three of them, I don't think that he is a driver of success. I think he's an excellent complementary player. So if you've got a lot of really strong leadership on your team, he would be very good to have. But I feel like both Hall and Eberle are like leader players who drive success.
Okay. So now Dalton, you traded Eberle.
He's a very one-dimensional player. He, in my mind, is kind of, he doesn't really play like Taylor Hall, but their roles in the team were almost similar. But Taylor Hall drove the play so much more, was so much more of a driver for the team in general. Nuge, one, is a center, and two, his two-way ability is miles ahead of both Taylor Hall and Jordan Eberle. It's so much more of a complete player. And I think as well, Eberle, he's a finisher, right? He needs other players on his line that are good for him to be good.
Well, yeah, just look at him in New York. He scores 20 goals easy, but if you go and watch his highlights, they're not really him doing much. They're him just taking sweet passes from Barzal.
That's a lot of his play. So that's why I'd move away from Eberle out of the three. But
okay, so now I traded Taylor Hall. I traded Taylor Hall because I felt like the relationship there was just so sour by the end of it that you had to get rid of him. I feel like with McDavid coming in, I didn't want Connor kind of messing around with Hall. I don't feel like Hall's head was in the right place. And Eberle and McDavid worked decently. Even Eberle and Nuge worked well. Nuge's two-way play also this season. And I really feel like Nuge this season, because if you told me, I don't feel like last season, if I could tell you that confidently that Nuge could run his own line. This season, Nuge can run his own line. Nuge is also, he's from Moose Jaw. Like, he played for the Moose Jaw Warriors. He's an Oilers fan. when we make deep playoff runs eventually, Nuge is going to be the one to lay his body on the line. Like, he is going to live and die for this team, especially because he's also been the longest standing Oiler. So I feel like you trade Taylor Hall for a lot more than just Adam Larson. I feel like that was the reason that people were upset, is because one for one, that is not a good trade. You can trade Taylor Hall, it's just got to be the right trade for more than just Adam Larson. So that's why I would trade Taylor Hall.
Great. Awesome.
Yeah.
Well, you're both wrong, but that's okay.
So, so moving on, this weekend, yesterday was the All-Star Skill Competition. Tonight is the 3-on-3 All-Star Tournament. And did you guys watch any of the All-Star
games? I watched pretty much all of it, yeah.
Yeah, I did.
So, no, because it's stupid. But I do have a question for you.
All right.
Is Leon Draisaitl going to man up and give his $25,000 to Decker?
Oh, my fucking God.
I don't know. What are you talking about?
Don't make me drive up there, Dalton.
All right. So the girl from, I think she's in the U.S.
See, this is the problem. She's just some girl something. She's an Olympian.
Yeah, for the Americans,
right? Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So what they were doing during the skills competition is they were having Olympians from both. I think the Canadian team had some as well. I don't remember, though.
Yeah. No, I saw the picture. There were two U.S. and two Canadians.
So, yeah, they used players from the U.S. and the Canadian women's Olympic team.
This was the first time that women have competed in the All-Star tournament.
They're mostly using them to demo the events before the NHLers go,
when you say demo, we don't mean demo like, yeah, they're just demoing before the NHLers do it. These, like, the girl that did the fastest skater absolutely rocketed around the ring. She had
they're incredible players.
Like, these are Olympians. These are
rink girls who shovel the ice between the play. They're hockey.
Exactly.
Players. Very good hockey players. Yeah. Yes. Much better than I am, in fact.
Yes. Okay, so what is the bet between
no bet here. But what was happening is they were demoing the events before the NHLers are going. But for certain events they were competing and certain ones they weren't, apparently.
Yeah.
And it wasn't really clear which one was which. So for the passing competition that Draisaitl was in, the Olympic athlete who I don't know her name. Chris, do you know her name?
Brianna Decker.
Sure. No clue.
Wow. You are such a misogynist.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. Anyways, so she went first, but it wasn't televised, which is why a lot of people didn't really have any idea about this.
Yeah, I was going to say, because that's why I haven't seen this. The only one I really know is the girl that did.
Yeah, because they televised that one. I don't know why they didn't televise the other ones. Maybe because it took like a minute and a half or something. But anyways, she went first. She had a faster time than Draisaitl ended up having. So, she beat Draisaitl by 3 seconds.
Wow, that's actually not even like.
No, it was close. It was significant. The passing was that was an interesting event, but
yeah, there were some. It was funny watching Carlson go first in the passing competition. Like some of these guys are having some issues.
Oh,
with the
those saucers
passes.
Like that's so hard to do. Holy. But anyways, there's been a lot of. I don't know why people are getting a lot of people are getting upset about Draisaitl not giving his money to this Olympic athlete who is Decker, I believe her name was. I already forgot.
Yeah. Decker.
So basically that's the whole thing. So people are thinking that she should get the money because Draisaitl doesn't need it. And also she won the event. But,
right. So here's my thing. So first of all, I mean, I don't think Draisaitl should honestly give the money. I mean, I think that would be a really cool thing for him to do. He made $9 million and she is, she makes less, let's just say. But what happened is the NHL should give her $25,000.
Yeah, that's so, like, either she should have been in the event in the first place and been allowed to compete but there's just this, it's turned to the point where there's this expectation on Draisaitl, which I really don't feel like is fair, to have to donate the $25,000.
Yeah, I agree with that, especially because it wasn't like Like, they, like, my Instagram and Twitter blew up with the girl that competed in the fastest skating competition because of how fast she went. I had no idea this girl competed in the
Yeah, I don't know if it was just time constraints or whatever, but I, for some reason they didn't do it.
Yeah. All right. So I just kind of want to go through each event kind of as we go through and talk about it. So we started off, first event of the night was the fastest skater competition. We all know who won it.
McDavid.
If you don't know, Connor McDavid won it. He becomes the first player in NHL history to win the competition 3 years in a row. So, and this is actually the one where the Kendall Schofield or Schofield of the U.S. Women's National Team did it first, and she flew around that ring. Like I was like, and she had she's smaller yeah, than all of the guys. So, like. Yeah, so 5'2", so her stride is a lot smaller, but she was getting the legs, like, right off the bat when they blew the whistle for her to go, like, she got her legs moving, like, absolutely pumping. And she did it in 14.3, which is unreal. Next up, we got Miro Heiskanen of the Dallas Stars, rookie at the tournament. He did it in 13.9.
Heiskanen blew Keller. A tire, though.
Yeah, go ahead. Yeah, he did. Yeah. Right at the beginning. Clayton Keller went 14.5, actually slower than the Olympian. Pedersen went 13.93. Atkinson went 14.1. Jack Eichel went 13.5. And then Barzal went 13.7. And Connor McDavid went 13.3. A full 0.2 faster than the next person.
He's a fast boy.
I mean, there's nothing to say about McDavid. Like, this was, like, everyone in the event was, like, even the people in the, when they were doing interviews the day before were, like, they were talking about, like, oh, like, who do you think's going to win events? And people were, like, fastest skater competition. It's not even, like, McDavid's going to win it. Like, why am I?
I would have liked to see McKinnon, but sadly he dropped out right before.
Yeah.
I would have also liked to see it. Like, maybe give him a puck or something. As well, when they're doing their skating.
Yeah, so I think they should. There should be two. There should be fastest skater, just hands down, what they do, one full lap around the thing. And then they should do fastest skater with the puck, full.
And then I'm making them skate backwards.
Yeah, hey, that'd be a cool one too. I'm actually kind of sad that they didn't do the goalie race like they have.
But the mascot part was pretty good. Though.
Yeah. All right, moving on. Then we have the Gatorade NHL puck control. So those who don't know, the person starts at the red line, at the goal line. They go through, they just stick handle through some pucks. Then they do the sharp turns on their edges with the puck through a couple of cones. And then they come up to, like, these three stacked, like, tiers with openings in them. And you have to control the puck up on your stick and put it through the holes. And you have to do that three times, one through a small one through the highest one, one through the middle. And then put it into the empty net on the far
Man,
side
people
of the
struggled
ring.
With this one, though.
Yeah, they did. This was another one. Especially, like, everyone can do the stick handle through the pucks and then the edge work around the cones. The one that really slowed guys up was picking it up on the stick. So first up was Patrick Kane. He did it in 28.6.
Mm-hmm. He flew.
Which is real fast. I mean, Patty Kane has hands. We all know that. Then Elias Pettersson did it in 43.6, which is the slowest.
He
time
messed
here.
Up on the first part.
Yeah. Jeff Skinner went 35.4. Mark Scheifele went 32.1.
Yeah.
Pretty solid. Landeskog goes 33.4. Giroux, 30.2. Tavares, 35.2. And then Johnny Gaudreau wins it with 27.
Yeah, I don't think he made a mistake through that entire thing.
Just the way, like, the seamlessness that he does the little lacrosse Michigan up to his stick, picking the puck off the ice, and putting it through the rings or whatever, unreal. I mean, I kind of would have liked to also see Connor in this one, because I feel like he'd do pretty well at it.
I mean, it's like you could throw any killer in there, and they do pretty well on it, kind of thing, right?
Yeah. So Mark Shifley actually wasn't heavy, like participating in most of the. There were a few guys that I felt like I never saw. Like, I don't feel like I ever saw Mark Shifley participate, but he did pretty solid in the fucking.
Yeah. I think McDavid just did the fastest skier, right? Yeah. Well, also breather, it's let some of the other guys compete in some of these events too, where it's.
Yeah, exactly.
Like Austin Matthews competed in a couple of them. I saw that. Well,
yeah. Then the one of the ones that is newer is the Ticketmaster NHL Save Streak. So this is each goalie goes in from each division and goes against another division in a shootout. You have 8 shots, and then if you stop the final shot, they just keep shooting till someone scores on you, and you try and just stop people for the longest. So up first. We had Pekka Rinne. Quick shout out to, I'm trying to look here, McDavid scored on him, and Clayton Keller scored on him, and Elias Pettersson. McDavid undressed him. Embarrassed him. And it's funny because last year at the NHL All-Star Game, he was talking about Pekka Rinne in the sense of, he's like, oh man, I can't beat Rinne ever. He's just too good. So Rinne's longest streak was 2. Then Vasilevskiy goes up. He was going against the Metropolitan Shooters. Only person to score on him was Seth Jones.
Yeah.
Scored on him. He had the longest save streak. And,
Seth Jones had an 8. Unreal move to beat him as well.
Some of the moves in this were pretty great. Then John Gibson goes up. Blake Wheeler scores on him. And... O'Reilly scores on him. He had his longest streak was 3. Then we had Holtby come up. He had Eichel score on him. He had Chabot pull.
Yep.
Oh my god, that was dirty. Chabot's move. Score on him. Yeah. Of course. Kucherov scored on him. And Matthew scored on him. Longest save streak 2. Dubnyk goes up. He had a save. Draisaitl scored on him twice. Pettersson scored on him once. Longest save streak of 7. He almost made it. Still Vasilevskiy on top. Jimmy Howard goes in. Seth Jones scores on him twice. Barzal scores on him. Giroux scores on him. Longest save streak 2. Marc-Andre Fleury goes in. Kiskinen scores on him. Yeah, Shifley scores on him. And then he actually was 1 away from tying the... 2 away from tying it. And then Blake Wheeler comes in and like whiffs on the shot, and he like misplays it and goes through his legs and scores. Which was pretty funny. Longest save streak of 6. Then last goalie Henrik Lundqvist comes in. He gets scored on by Steven Stamkos, and then he goes on a 12 save streak until I think Stamkos ends it. But he comes in and wins it at the very end with a save streak of 12. And I always think this one is an interesting because it's not like super competitive, but then also you can see people like Fleury kind of get mad when they get scored on. But like also the NHLers aren't going in. Like they're all trying some like real fans.
I think this is my favorite event by far. Cause I think it's the one that's like most real game applicable out of all of them as well. But yeah, and it's also nice to see like Barzal's hands in a shootout because I don't really get to watch him all that often, right?
Well, it was awesome watching Jeff Skinner's move actually to end it on Lundqvist was nasty. Tommy Chabot has some unreal
better than I expected
hands.
From him actually.
Yeah. All right, then we had the premier passer. So now this one is you have a bunch of pucks behind the net. And there's 3 little targets that are kind of like NHL sticks set up. And you have to come around the net and kind of hit them like you're hitting 3 targets for breakout passes. Then you come to the center and you have to hit 4 sauce goals, little tiny little goals, over top of saucer blockers. And then you have to
The last one, targets that light up randomly.
The targets that light up. That's right. That's right. You hit the targets that light up randomly. Eric Carlson comes in, and he has a minute 58.8. They actually turned the clock off for him because I thought Eric Carlson would be good, but, like, he was just not. Like, the saucer passes, he was flubbing all of them. Then, like, the targets were changing randomly on him, and he, like, couldn't. He would, like, shoot it
by, like,
late
a quarter of a second. He was just getting screwed over and over again.
Yeah, so they actually just shut the clock off for Carlson at a minute 58. Then Mikko Rantanen goes up and does even worse at 2 minutes and 17 seconds. Aho goes up, does a bit better, a minute 18. Ryan O'Reilly, a minute 25. Chabot, minute 40. Leon Draisaitl comes up and does it in a minute 9. Draisaitl flew through.
The saucing into the nets was by far the hardest part, and he just aced that part.
Yeah, he did. I actually thought it would be really funny if at some point, like on some of the sauces, if he like missed a couple, he would just switch to his backhand.
Yeah, I was actually wondering if he was only going to do backhand sauce, because I mean, that's all he does in games, so.
Yeah, exactly. Roman Josi does it in a minute 47, and Keith Yan does it in a minute 34. And so, Dalton, what you guys were saying is the girl did it in a minute 6 seconds? Wow, that is...
Yeah, I'm kind of mad I didn't get to watch it. Like, I wish it was that part on TV.
Yeah, I am too, because, like, Draisaitl went through it in a minute 9, and I just thought, wow, that was smooth.
He missed, like, 2 the entire time.
Yeah. And then, I guess, I would have liked to see the girl do it.
That would have been impressive to watch, right? So, she must have sick hands, holy.
Yeah. And so most of these, so the one I disagree with the most is the hardest shot competition, because that's like one where I feel like we can all name a few players that weren't in this competition at the All-Star game. They can crush the times that these guys had. Like, put Zdeno Chara or Shea Weber in this competition. Yeah. And
well, I mean.
Yeah, exactly. Like, it's hard to be like, oh, okay, well, this person would be definitely a better passer than Draisaitl or I'd like to see Mikko or Dylan Larkin and McDavid race, which I really would. But, like, right, it's hard to compare in that sense. But, like, with the hardest shot, I feel like, I would put John Carlson's winning time of 102 seconds up against Zdeno Chara now or Shea Weber now, and I bet you they'd break 110.
It's like, well, even, like, the selection for the people there, I'm like – there's a couple other guys that I thought maybe would have had harder shots as well.
Yeah, I agree. So they only have 4 guys shooting this, which is one, like 4 out of all the people selected. So Seth Jones goes first. He goes 99.4. John Carlson absolutely smashes it at 102.8. Stamkos does a 96.2, and Brent Burns missed the net.
It was
completely
amazing.
Then Brent Burns goes again. He gets 106. Not a bad bounce back. Steven Stamkos goes 93.1. So Stamkos, I know, has a good one-timer. Yeah. Like, that's his thing. But I wouldn't say, oh, man, Stamkos really has a
He has, like, a decently – for a forward, he has a decently heavy shot, right? But you normally see the D-men who really can just drill him.
Yeah, Jones goes 95. And then John Carlson does another 108. John Carlson wins with 102.8, which it's 100 miles. He's breaking 100 miles an hour each shot. So, you know what? I'll let him have it.
It's just, I almost wish that one wasn't in there, because it was kind of a boring event.
Yeah, it is kind of one of the, especially with only 4 guys. I'd love to see McDavid take it, see how hard McDavid can hit it, or maybe Draisaitl, because he.
But like, I would have liked to see those guys, just because it would have made it more interesting for me, an Oilers fan. Like, in general.
Right. But maybe it doesn't take that long. Like, what you should do is have everyone shoot once, and then maybe like the top 5, you have them shoot.
I think they should do every single event is just lottery picked who gets to do it.
Ooh. Okay. And then the last event of the night is the Honda NHL Accuracy Shooting. I really like how they sold off the events. accuracy shooting, and so this is a little bit different than what it's been done in the past. Normally, there's a little foam targets, one in each corner, and you just break them. Now they have, like, they light up randomly, and there's a five-hole target, which I guess is fun, but I feel like it's a lot cooler to see a player go 4-for-4 right off the bat in, like, 4 seconds.
Yeah. But also, they had the players' faces on the targets.
And they had the players' emojis on the targets.
So dumb.
And just basically, it was pretty dumb. So David Pastrnak goes first at 11.3, which setting the bar really high. Palmieri goes at 20.2, Doughty at 13.5. Matthews took a 31.2.
He was having some issues.
Oh, Matthews so good. Matthews is so good.
After he ripped off his jersey, revealing that he was wearing a Patty Marlowe jersey behind it.
Toronto Maple Leafs Patty Marlowe. And I mean, I guess it's in San Jose, so I'll let him have the fan service.
It's all for fun, you know.
Blake Wheeler goes with a respectable 18.5. Letang actually did really well at 12.6. Nikita Kucherov goes 19 flat. Pavelski goes 14.4. Pastrnak wins it with 11.3.
Yeah, you pretty much aced that one. You did really well.
Yeah, he did. So here's my question is, what is there? So Dalton, me and you are kind of already talked about, but Chris, what would, if you could add an event to the NHL All-Star or the skill challenge or whatever, what event would you make the NHLers do?
Hitting. I put Johnny Gaudreau at center ice and see how far you could hit him.
All right. That's like, I know you're mostly joking here, but I think that actually be a pretty cool event if, like, see how hard you could hit, like, this pad or something like that with the NHLers.
Yeah.
Maybe put force trackers or like the little force patches or whatever that they did on, like, in, like, Mythbusters, you know what I'm talking about? That measure, like, the force of explosion or impact on, like, maybe, like, the corner boards and have people skate from, like, the blue line in. And then, but, like, obviously they can't, like, charge into it because they don't want to simulate someone just, like, boarding someone. So have them, like, kind of give them a little bit of a head start and then have them go in like they're trying to, like, forecheck hard and just slam into the corner boards and then register.
Or you could just hit a random fan every single time and just drill them over and over again.
Yeah. Maybe we could implement what Chris has and put the fan on the boards. Have them hit the boards and see how far.
And then we can figure out if Johnny Gaudreau could actually hit somebody or if the fan would stab them up.
Yeah. Exactly. I volunteer to be that fan. All right. So then the last part of the NHL All-Star game is the 3-on-3 tournament.
Which is happening pretty quickly now.
Very soon. Yeah, it happens at 8 tonight. 8 our time, 6 Dalton's time, because he's on the West. I love 3-on-3. This is probably one of the best ideas that just 3-on-3 in general, even in actual games. 3-on-3 has been one of the best ideas the NHL has come up with in the last little bit.
It's way more fun than shootouts, for sure.
And then the 3-on-3 in this has been awesome. The Pacific Division, I think, has won it 2 years in a row now.
When you look at the lineup, it's no surprise, really.
Yeah, but if you look at any lineup, like last year, Ovechkin and Crosby were on the same line. That's fair. So, I mean, I'm actually going to add this. So these are going to be our first predictions of the week.
Oh, look at that.
Yeah, see that segue, though? Okay, so first off, the Central Division plays the Pacific Division. Do you need me to read off the roster for each team or no? Okay. Fair enough. So, Dalton,
are we
going to
do the score, or are we just going to do the who wins?
Here's what we'll do. We'll do the score for the first two because those are the games we know. And then, based on who you think wins, we'll have you predict who wins the final, and we'll just do
wins. Pacific v. Central. I'm going to pick the Pacific winning 7-2. Sorry, Chris, sort of, I guess.
7-2 win for the Pacific. All right, Chris, what do you think? Pacific Central.
I think that the Central is going to win 19-1.
Nice, like it. Chris is taking this seriously to start us off.
I think the Pacific's going to win like 11-6.
Come on, man. Stand by your guns.
No.
So the Pacific wins 11-6. All right, that's a pretty solid one. I'm going to say the Pacific wins. I'll say this is a – people are kind of starting to figure out and take the 3-on-3 a little bit more seriously. So I'm going to say this is going to be a 6-5 Pacific win. Yeah. Okay. Chris, we'll have you start the next one. It is the Metropolitan versus the Atlantic.
I think that – the Atlantic's going to win 8-6.
All right. 8-6 Atlantic win.
I'm going to agree Dalton? With Chris. I think the Atlantic is going to win, but I think it's going to be a little bit more lopsided. We're going to go with an 8-2 victory.
8-2 Atlantic win. Okay, so, all right, you got to remind me. Who's the Atlantic and who's – so Atlantic is – like the Penguins, and is Toronto in the Atlantic?
No, the Metro has the Penguins in it.
Okay, and then the Lightning and them are
it's in the Atlantic. Yeah, you got it.
Or the Atlantic. Cool. Okay, so then I think I think the Lightning led squad with Vasilevskiy and that and all that is going to also win. So I think we're all agreeing it's going to be Pacific
almost,
Atlantic.
Almost. Chris is thinking Central Atlantic.
No, not
you.
No. He changed. He said. He said 11-6 Pacific win. Yep. So we all have Pacific winning. We all have the Atlantic winning. I'm gonna say the Atlantic is gonna win. I'll say 9-7. 9-7 Atlantic win. Okay. So now we all have the Pacific playing the Atlantic in the finals. The finals are also.
Yeah, I think everything's tonight.
Okay, cool. Wonderful. Pacific Atlantic in the finals. I'm going to say the Pacific wins it. I'm just going to say the Pacific wins it.
Also, Pacific is going to win.
Is this your guys' Stanley Cup?
Yep.
Yes. McDavid Draisaitl.
I think the Atlantic's going to win.
How could you?
The Atlantic.
I could and I did.
Okay. So here's what we're gonna say for a tiebreaker: who wins MVP? That's what. Instead of a score as our tiebreaker, who wins MVP?
Connor McDavid.
All right, you say McDavid. I'm going to say.
Oh, that's a risky pick.
You fucking homer.
All right. Chris, who do you think?
I'm going to say the Cooch.
Ooh.
And the Cooch. All right, solid pick. If I had to pick someone from the Atlantic, I'd say Vasilevskiy.
I don't know if a goalie would win the MVP because they switch him so often.
Yeah, that's true. It's true. They have to, like... So then moving on to actual hockey... And Edmonton is actually on their bye week, so they don't play again until next Saturday night. But I'll add that in this week. So then we have the Winnipeg Jets fly to Philadelphia and play them in Philly on Monday. Chris, how are you feeling about this road trip?
I think it's really frustrating because aside from that Dallas loss, I feel like the Jets were playing really well. They beat Vegas, they beat Nashville pretty convincingly. But then they have like a week and a half off at the worst time. I'm hoping Buffalo will be back, and I'm hoping that Gritty is sick or something so we don't have to see his crazy face. And then I predict a 4-2 win for the Jets.
A 4-2 Jets win. All right.
Dalton, what do you think? The Jets are going to win as well. But it's going to be a little bit closer, a 2-1 victory for the Jets. And I predict it'll be a very sloppy game for the Jets.
Go ahead.
I think it's going to be a very sloppy game for the Jets as well.
Okay. I also think the Jets are going to win. I'm going to say it's going to be a 5-3 Jets win. Okay, then moving on. The next night, they play a back-to-back. They play Boston at in the Boston Garden. I'll start this one off. I'm going to say they lose the back-to-back. They lose to Boston. I'll say 2-1 OT win. OT loss.
I'm agree with you, yeah. I think they're going to suffer a little bit on this back-to-back. I think it's going to be a 4-1 Boston win.
4-1 Boston win. All right, Chris, back-to-back.
Yeah, the Jets don't really do that well on back-to-backs. I think that they're going to lose as well. I think they'll lose 3-1.
Yeah, the combination of the back-to-back with the bye week is not a good thing for the Jets.
Yeah. Then the Jets play at home. So just a quick little back-to-back road trip. They play the Columbus Blue Jackets at home on Thursday.
I think it's going to be a good bounce-back game for the Jets. A solid 5-1 victory for them.
5-1 win. Chris, what do you think?
Is Bobrovsky still their goalie?
Yes, for the moment.
Yes, he is.
I don't know anything about the Blue Jackets. They're like the team that you never hear anything about.
They also have Seth Jones.
They're pretty good. They got Seth Jones. They got Werenski.
Panarin.
It's Panarin. Or the Bradman. Or as I like to call him, the world's youngest rookie.
Still a little salty, eh?
No, I'm still salty. So, Chris, what do you
think? The Jets are going to win in a shootout
3-2.
3-2.
Shootout win. All right. I'm going to say Jets are going to win this 4-1. Pretty solid victory. And then the only Oilers game for the week, they play Saturday against Philly. In Philly. Dalton. No, Chris, we'll start with you.
I'm hoping that Gritty is sick so that we don't have to see his face. I feel like the Oilers are going to come out and like play really well because, you know, Shirelli's gone. So I'm going to say 4-2.
Shirelli's gone. They've had a bit of a break.
4-2.
4-2. All right, solid. 4-2 win.
Dalton. I'm trying to decide whether I want to be depressing or not. You know, but I'm going to say it's going to be a 2-0 Oilers victory with a Koskinen shutout.
2-0 Koski shutout win. That's what I like to hear, Dalton. I'm going to say Oilers come out and win 7-4.
I like it.
So that is all our predictions for the week, boys. Do we have anything else we want to say and talk about?
Gritty is really creepy. I agree with Chris.
Terrifying.
I don't know. I love.
Did you see the Gritty Hunter picture?
I did. That is just
very much so. I'm a little surprised Hunter wasn't showing off the six pack, but other than that,
Hunter holy. Shredded. All right, everyone. Well, that brings us to the conclusion of episode 14. Chris, it's good to have you back.
It's great to be back. Thank you very much.
Yeah.
You can follow us on Twitter at Blue Line South. You can follow us on anywhere podcasts are available. SoundCloud, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, Anchor. Anywhere you want your podcast, it will most likely be there. I am Michael. Chris is back. Dalton's
still here, boy.
Calgary. And we will see you all next week.
Bye.
See you guys.